Welcome to Dissecting the 80s. I am one half of the Mega Podcasting Powers, Trip Lano. With me, as always, the Watson to my Holmes, a man whose business is to know what other people don't know, the Macho Mandrew.
Andrew Lano.
So, tell them who we are.
We are Dissecting the 80s, a fortnightly podcast that dissects the pop culture of our favorite decade, the 1980s. Be it a movie, a television show, a pop culture icon, or a pay-per-view event.
Before we get into that, we'll do a couple quick housekeeping notes like we always do. The first thing we'd like to do is welcome any new listeners to the Dissectomania family. Happy to have you here. I hope there's a few more ears coming our way after that whole brouhaha on Twitter where we got mildly famous for 5 minutes. Don't normally like to talk about our non-podcast lives on here, but it is kind of relevant, I guess, since some of you might be out there listening. Tweeted about a botched Hateful Eight screening. We tried to go to see the 70mm Roadshow in King of Prussia last weekend. Didn't work out. We had kind of a snide theater manager there. And I will say, in defense of the theater, who I'm not going to name because I think they did a fine job, you know, giving us our money back and an extra free pass, but snide theater manager being kind of douchey about film being inferior to digital, I was kind of offended. Posted it on Twitter, and then all of a sudden, the whole world blew up about it. We were in Variety, which is amazing. Like, beyond compare, was kind of amazing to see our name in Variety.
I'm surprised we weren't on, like, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, right.
I was expecting, like, it was going to be like, BuzzFeed, 30 things you won't believe about the Hateful Eight screenings.
That is exactly their wheelhouse. You're totally right. I'm surprised we didn't get that from them. But it was very cool, and we met a lot of new people following us on Twitter, so if you're new to the show, welcome. We hope you enjoy your stay here. Go check out the past catalog. We've got about, this is our 35th episode, so we got quite a lot of content for you to explore. If you do want to find out more about us, facebook.com/dissectingthe80s.
Instagram.com/dissectingthe80s, or dissectingthe80s on the app.
Twitter.com/dissectomania, slightly different name there for the character limits. And dissectingthe80s.com has everything you'll ever want to know, info about us, where you can find the past episodes, and all that fun stuff.
Maybe merch in the future.
Yeah.
If you're listening. If you're listening in 20 years, maybe merch.
And one other thing to note, if you review our show on iTunes, we will read it on the air. So we're looking for people to join in the fun with us. Review the show, rate it on iTunes. So if you do that, we will read it on the air. So this week, we are taking on an Andrew pick, which is something that doesn't happen too often around here. Usually I'm the one setting the agenda as far as that goes. So tell them what we're watching.
We are watching Young Sherlock Holmes, which is not necessarily canon to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
And they're really sure that you know that from Jump Street when you turn the movie on.
It's real obvious. But this is to tie into the Sherlock show that is just released, their Victorian special.
Yep.
Right? It's Victorian times.
It aired last night. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but my favorite part of this is I thought you were a fan since you were like, oh, we should tie into that. And I was like, yeah, we should watch the new episode and, you know, do that too. And you were like, yeah, I don't watch that show.
I don't watch that show, but I know
you're
I know a lot of people who watch that show.
Yeah, you're just on the ball with the good branding. So that said,
we gotta go back, Marty. We gotta go dissect the 80s. Like, hey, was afoot.
When the Mega Powers explode.
I'm talking about the 80s.
Great Scott.
Cream of the crop.
Mega power, yeah!
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
So this, as Andrew just said, this movie very quickly wants you to know, hey, this is not a true Sherlock Holmes story. It's kind of our twist on this narrative. We love the character. Just go with us. And it's just kind of interesting.
The idea is that it's Holmes and Watson if they had met as school children instead of as adults.
Right, exactly. We'll get into some of this later, but for most of the movie, I was kind of happy because my problem with prequels is usually the main person meets all of the important people in their life at this very young age, and then they are supposed to have known each other for forever. They do this in that Monsters, Inc., Monsters University, the Monsters, Inc. prequel, where not only do they meet their best friend, but they also meet their lifelong enemy and, like, five other people they just happen to work with. Which
I didn't think I saw the five other people. I remember Mike and Sully and Randall, but I don't remember the other people.
Didn't they encounter, like, a really young version of Roz as, like, a school administrator?
Oh, like, you know what? I think they did, and they also dealt with the 2319 guy.
Right.
The sock guy.
Yeah. That's right. So, and it's fine. Like, I get why you want to do that. The people who are coming to see your prequel are the people that loved your first movie, and so you want them to be like, oh, it's that guy, or it's that girl, or whatever.
You
want to
wink at them.
Right. But I think it makes a lot more sense as a real narrative to be, you know, maybe you meet your best friend, but it's unlikely that you meet all of the people that you work with day to day. You know, he's already knows Lestrade. He's met Watson. He's met, as we find out, a big, not to spoil anything, but he meets a big adversary. You know, there's just all these, you know, people cycling in and out of the thing. So I was kind of happy in the beginning when I was like, oh, this is cool. They're not going to have him meet all of the people. Oh, just kidding. I meet all the people.
Although I kind of like the Lestrade because the idea that... The idea that there's a 15, would you say he's 15?
15 or 16 years old is probably about right, yeah.
The idea
he's not ready to graduate high school, I don't think.
No. The idea that there's like a 16-year-old kid who's just like bursting into the inspector's office being like, here's the clues to the case. Like, and he's like, no, you're a child. Get out of my office. I liked that element because that is what would happen.
Oh, absolutely. I thought the inspector, well, I guess he's not an inspector in the beginning of the movie. I forget what his rank was, but he becomes an inspector by the end. But
detective?
Maybe it's detective. I'm not sure how the ranking system goes in Scotland Yard. I'm not super well-versed in that area of area of knowledge, but it's a pretty fun movie. I will say we were both kind of hesitant watching this because we watched this a lot when we were younger. It was one of our, you know, favorite-ish. I don't know about favorite being the right word.
I would call it top 15.
Yeah, we watched this movie quite a lot when we were younger. I've always been obsessed with Sherlock Holmes. I started reading those books when I was probably about 12 and just loved them. So any Sherlock Holmes content I was eagerly into, and you also like this, so we watched it quite a bit. It's also got a pretty good pedigree. It's directed by Christopher Columbus, Chris Columbus.
And written by.
Oh, is it written by him as well?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, so really competent children's movie director, a guy who makes really good children's aimed movies that adults can enjoy too, and it shows. This is a really probably one of the best directed movies we've watched for this whole show, I would say.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah. So let's get into the plot here a little bit after all that rambling. It starts off with a guy strolling down a snowy British street from the Victorian era and stopping.
I did appreciate because nowadays you can't do Victorian London without a sweeping, soaring zoom through the city streets shot. Like, every movie that, like, Sweeney Todd did it, the new Sherlock Holmes does it, where the camera, like, runs through the streets and you see, like, chestnuts, newspapers, flowers for sale, and it, like, quickly goes through everything, and they're like, no, it's just going to be this one.
Extra, real, bow it!
Yeah. Murders plague London!
Queen powerless to stop it!
Covent Garden Flower Market. Flowers for sale!
I don't know why the queen is involved in stopping the murders, but I love the idea of her like her grabbing a baton and getting out there.
I wish she would.
yeah,
but
no,
she's like in disguise, so like she puts the hat, the tall hat on over her crown, and like just the big coat on over her robes. So the big reveal at the end when she's like, "I'm actually the queen," takes off the hat.
And the murderer is just like, oh, Mom, we're so sorry.
Yes.
We didn't mean it.
Spirit, no.
So, yeah, it does just assume that you know what Victorian London looks like, which I guess no one else is capable of these days. And it's just one of those stupid little things that you notice when you're watching a movie for this kind of format. But he's looking at an outdoor menu like, ooh, what's the pub got today? And it's such a thing that I assume that's a modern-ish development, but I have no idea. Because I would assume your average English pub in that era has, like, four items on the menu.
The same four items.
Right. It's, like, a beef stew, a shepherd's pie, you know, a couple of side dishes.
A pheasant.
Yeah.
A roast pheasant.
Yeah. And it's, like, I'm assuming they're not going, like, today we have a lovely selection of local ramps. They are roasted and mixed with some fresh rosemary from the back garden and a pheasant that our founder and proprietor shot in his garden last week. Like,
it would be like, oh, we did the pheasant guy didn't bring any pheasant, and there would be a big wooden sign up front that says no pheasant today.
Pheasant because free.
Because you'd know what four dishes you can get here.
Right.
One of them is pheasant, not today.
Guess it's shepherd's pie for me. So yeah, I just thought it was funny that this guy's like intently studying a menu and we see him get hit with a blow dart in the side of the neck.
It's a big old robe. It's like, I've definitely seen movies where, if you're familiar with Broadway, which two of you might be, the production of Into the Woods, the original one where the witch comes out for her transformation wearing the biggest cloak you've ever seen and the biggest hood you've ever seen to hide the fact that it's not Bernadette Peters in a little while. It looks like that, just wandering through the streets and no one is batting an eyelash that this giant cloaked figure is just like whoo, 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 through the streets.
Yeah, he's darting around, hiding behind stuff. He is being completely spicuous.
He's Marty McFly. He's yes. Marty McFly tailing Biff.
He's trying to smell Biff's neck, as it were. See Back to the Future Biff. 2. Yeah, see Back to the Future 2 episode for more on that particular riff. So this guy gets hit with a blow dart. He goes inside. He orders his pheasant, as you do. And this was one of the first instances of the movie where I was like, oh, I totally remember this part. And his pheasant comes to life on the table and starts attacking the shit out of him.
Like the head pops out because it doesn't have a head. It's like a cooked little pheasant, which looks like a chicken. And so the head bursts through the section where the head is supposed to be. And then the feathers, did it have feet when it came to the table?
I think it had the claw feet. Yeah, it didn't have feet weren't removed.
So the head popped out and then it leaps onto him and starts pecking and scratching at him. And he loses his mind trying to defend himself.
And it's a really awesome puppet. It's like really kind of creepy and gross looking. And the dude sells it really well that he's terrified of this thing that's trying to attack him. It kind of
reminds me of that scene in It when the Chinese restaurant food comes to life.
Oh, yeah.
The top of the second movie.
Yeah.
When the adults get together. Yeah, it reminded me of that where everything is horrifying and creepy.
Yeah, no, absolutely is. And then it pulls back and you reveal that everyone watching just sees this guy swatting at the air and screaming and everyone's kind of like, what is happening with this guy?
See, I was hoping he would be holding his cooked pheasant.
He's like making an attack himself?
Yeah, he's like just pushed, like wagging it in his face. Because that's my thing with all these hallucination stuff is that, you know, they say, oh, it's incredibly realistic hallucinations. Every movie says that. But does that include your sense of touch with the hallucination? I've never done anything hallucinatory.
Me either. I've never done anything like that at all. But I would imagine so, but I really have no idea.
Because I understand like the sensation like, oh, something's crawling on me. But could you imagine that there is a physical force, like that there is a pheasant pecking you in the face?
I wonder that too. But then the other thing is, as you said, the crawling on you thing, it made me remember. I do know that people get like the sensation of bugs crawling on them and stuff like that. So there is touch-based hallucination. I don't know if you touching somebody makes a difference in that, but they definitely have people definitely.
Because I can understand the crawling, like that makes sense that your skin would be like. But the idea that you are imagining that you feel a singular giant thing on you seems weird to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just that he's imagining the bird is alive and swatting at it, and he's maybe not feeling the pecks from the stabs and pokes. It's not like he's bleeding or anything.
Because that's why I wanted him to be holding it, because he could be scratching himself when he's pulling it to his face and away. Right. Like the claws are still on there.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't actually get injured at all. He just feels like he does. But so he's the guy who leaves the table and is then splashing water on his face in his room, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He pulls a Scrooge and goes up the creepy lit staircase, dropping all his clothes on the way up.
And he goes in and he does the classic movie, like, oh, gotta get my shit together. Go in the bathroom, splash some water on my face. Do you know anyone who's done this? Not because, like, I have done this, but I think I've purely done it because I've seen people do it in a movie. And, like, that's a thing you do when you get your shit together kind of thing. But I wonder if there's anyone who's like, if this is a thing people did before it was a thing in movies.
I don't know, because I've tried it once as I was like, oh, I'm having a panic attack. Movies say to do this. I was like, that does nothing. Now I'm just wet.
Now I'm just damp and still freaking out.
This helps nothing. Because I see it all the time. And luckily, I think movies have gotten away from this.
Yeah, it doesn't happen as much as it used to.
In Jessica Jones, there's one point when, in early episode, she goes to the bathroom. I was like, if she's about to splash cold water on her face, I'm going to lose my mind. But instead, she makes a hand cup and drinks.
Yeah, so he splashes water on his face, and he goes to lay down in his bed, and we're at a kind of an odd high angle, and immediately I'm going, oh man, this is going to be an Evil Dead room, and I am so excited, because that is like one of my favorite things. It's a slightly under bag of soup is room goes crazy, and things start talking to people.
And his hat that he hung up on a hook flies across the room. So he picks it up and goes to put it back, and it falls off again. And then he puts it back, and then it's sort of this really tall, wide coat hanger. So it's got all the hooks down the side and sort of some shelves in the middle, about the width of the over-the-toilet shelving systems. And all of a sudden, the hooks fly out of there and wrap around him like Beetlejuice and hold him tight. And then he's got these awesome gas lamps in his room that look like snakes. And they start, like, wiggling around, going crazy, and just launching fireballs around the room.
It's amazing.
So he's in an inferno. And the coat rack lets him go, and he runs right through the window. He just stuntman shoulders his way through that window. Pavement below.
Not a bag of soup. Not high enough. But
yeah, it would not have been high enough for a bag
pretty,
of soup.
Pretty good fall, and he is obviously dead. And this is when we get the disclaimer that it's like, we're going to say Sherlock Holmes and Watson and a bunch of other things, but don't worry, we're not ruining the things you like. It's cool, don't worry, just watch the movie, it's fun. Yay!
Yeah. Oh, and then you hear, you see the cloaked figure walk by and like a tinkle-tinkle of metal.
Right. They do a really great job, I think, of quick characterization with Sherlock Holmes. It's assumedly some of the people watching this movie know who Sherlock Holmes is, but the vast majority of the child audience probably has no idea. And Sherlock Holmes is one of those characters that's really hard to translate outside of fiction because he's kind of a monster. Like,
yeah, he's an a-hole.
Yeah, he is. And he has this absurd knowledge of everything that's just impossible. So, you know, I was a big fan of House, although I was rewatching it yesterday as part of a New Year's Day marathon. And I was like, this show is not as good as I remember. I remember liking this a lot. It is not good. But with House, they just narrowed it to he knows everything about weird diseases, which is way easier than the actual Sherlock Holmes, who knows everything about, like, say, every brand of tobacco sold in Britain, which tobacconists sell, which special varieties, and how all of them smell.
It's funny, because I feel like if he was written now, everyone would just call him a Mary Sue, which is a word that I just learned from the internet.
Oh, from the terrible Star Wars assholes?
Well, someone said it. I was like, what is that? So they're like, is Ray a Mary Sue? Also, parentheses, what is a Mary Sue? And I was like, yes, that's the one I want to click. I want to know what's going on. And if you're unfamiliar, Mary Sue came from fan fiction where people were writing themselves into these stories and being like, I'm a mysterious girl who also can turn into a snake, and I'm a wizard, Harry, and Harry and Draco fight for my love. And, like, I ace all my classes, and I'm a prefect, and Dumble makes me headmaster.
Like, it's you nailed it, except it would definitely have been Star Trek.
Yeah. It would have been like Spock. I would have been like, Spock and Kirk fight for my love, and that's where my knowledge would end.
Nope. Perfectly fine. Great example all the way through. Good job on you. Except just, it probably would have been a Star Trek thing to start with. My hunch is that it was science fiction based. But yeah, he is a very much a Mary Sue character. He knows literally everything about everything. Down to, in one of the mysteries, he sees a broken pocket watch and is able to identify the origin of it by one of the gears.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Like, he knows everything about everything. And that's kind of what makes him fun, is he's basically this hyper-observant, crazy person. But we're introduced...
That's why I like Psych about it. That's why I like the Psych.
What do you mean?
We're essentially going to talk about all the shows that do Sherlock without being Sherlock.
Yeah.
Is that Psych guesses a lot. And it's not knowledge, it's... I see something, and I'm going to make a wild guess and hope that it's right.
Right. I've always felt that Sherlock makes a lot, until this most recent BBC series, which I do really, really enjoy. Sherlock always worked best for me as a on-the-page character, because it just is harder to believe in real life when you see someone saying these things versus kind of imagining it in your head that this guy's like, oh, that slightly sweet and sour-smelling tobacco must be blah, 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 which is only sold at this one tobacconist's on Alcombe Street. Quickly, to the carriage. And it's just like...
Na, 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 na.
Yeah, exactly.
The pipe spins towards the camera.
And I say, huge, huge fan, love Sherlock Holmes. That is the way I interpret it, is he's kind of a monster, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense if you think about it too hard. He is very Mary Sue. That's a good way to put it. But we're introduced to him here because Watson, who is narrating the story for us as an adult, it's an adult narrator.
It's a Ted Mosby situation.
Yes. Is explaining that he's come to this boarding school, that he's new there, and he immediately meets Sherlock Holmes. And Holmes is able to quickly look at Watson, identify three or four things about. He has a stain on his lapel. He has a certain type of bag. He has a certain type of shoes. He's fat. And he's fat in, like, not even 1980. He's not even 1980s fat.
He's not chunk fat. He's not truffle shuffle fat.
Right. And that's like, that's the chunk is my 1980s fat, like, in my head. So I don't know why they started calling this kid. I guess in the Victorian era, we are talking about the 1880s, I guess, technically.
Yeah, the 1880s. our favorite decade, the 1880s.
And he very quickly is like, based on these four observances I've made, you are from this area, your family has money, you're da 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 da. And he kind of like.
Doctor.
Yeah.
But like, you just met this kid, and one of the first things you're going to say to him is, you're fat. Like, the kid just walks in, he's brand new to the school, and he's like, oh, the custard stain on your lapel, it makes me think that it's for a custard tart. Also, you're fat, so I assume you eat them all the time. And it's like, dude, and this is why you have no friends.
And poor Watson, who absolutely looks like, and this is an obscure reference, a young version of Jeff Rubin from College Humor. He used to do all their video game stuff. He's still out there. He has his own podcast. He looks like a kind of a weird cross between a young Jeff Rubin or the super young Daniel Radcliffe from like Harry Potter 1.
Which is ironic because this movie feels very Harry Potter.
Oh, it absolutely does.
Because we haven't met her yet, but there is a young girl and it's a portly sidekick. I guess, yeah, Ron was kind of portlier. He was rounder faced in the movie, in the books.
Who?
Ron. I assumed he was
I always assumed Ron was sort of a little bit of a chubby goofball kid, too. He definitely was not in the movies, but yeah, I pictured him as...
Well, none of them. Hermione was also supposed to be ugly in the movies.
Well...
In the books.
Not to be a terrible monster, but the way that they dressed and made the hair up for that girl in the first two movies was definitely them attempting to do that.
But then they were like, nah, she's got to be pretty. I mean, Emma Watson is
gorgeous. Well, Emma Watson is gorgeous. It's, at a certain point, you're doing like a shitty 90s teen movie where you're like, quick, put her in glasses and get some paint-covered overalls on her. She's she's yeah. ugly now. Look away. She's hideous.
So hex me. That is a super obscure right
now. Like, you know, at a certain point, when you have a very attractive person, it's impossible to make them ugly. It's just like my same thing that I've said to you a billion times about that show New Girl. Like, are we really supposed to believe that the character played by
Zooey Deschanel
is some hideous chut? Like, no. Obviously, she's gorgeous. What the hell is wrong with you people?
Yeah, that's kind of a thing.
Like, she's not even on the actress scale. She's not even towards the low end on the actress scale. Like, she's obviously very attractive.
Although,
anyway.
I guess she is more of the best friend than the lead.
Yeah, but that's because she, like, plays the ukulele and shit.
And has a Polaroid collection.
Right, like, she's just a goofy person, so that's what they do with her. But anyway, let's not talk about Zooey Deschanel for 4 hours. Look, I could do that. I'm going to choose not to.
I definitely could, but that's a different podcast.
That is our other podcast that comes out in the off weeks of Dissect the 80s. It's the Zooey Deschcast. We just go...
It's the Manic Pixie Dreamcast.
Yes, that's it. The Manic Pixie Dreamcast. Every episode is just a single scene of something she's been in, so we have material for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to what I was saying about Sherlock Holmes, they kind of use this as the template in future versions of this character of, like, you quickly have to establish that he's super knowledgeable and get it done in
a
short
time.
And
a bit of a little sandpapery.
Exactly. So they do that with the Robert Downey Jr. movies where he, like, quickly rocks through, like, you're this, and this because of that. So I don't know if this is the first time it's done. I honestly can't recall if it's as quick to the point in the books as this, but it works really well for a movie or a TV show for him to just kind of go, oh, three things I'm pointing out, and here's what they mean. I kind of nailed your character in 5 seconds.
This is not the first film adaptation of a Sherlock Holmes, right?
I don't know the answer, but I have to imagine
one in the 60s.
I have to imagine Sherlock Holmes has been adapted since film was around. I mean, these books are from the turn of the century.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised.
There's got to be silent films.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's... I'm almost positive there's a Hound of the Baskervilles from, like, the 19-teens or 1920s. Mm-hmm. You could look if you'd like. I don't think it's the end of the world, but Sherlock Holmes has been in a film character for a long, long time.
Class talking.
Oh, that's right. That's the boring professor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who, like, doesn't notice that students get up and talk to the window in class.
Right. Then they all run outside and they see another character we're going to be hanging out with a bit, the eccentric professor who's got a flying machine that he's launching off the roof. And everyone is kind of staring up at the sky, the flying machine, which is a very Da Vinci-looking bicycle-powered flapping wings flying machine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving my hand in the air as if any of you can see what I'm doing. So he comes out, does like a turn around a building, and then crashes because, of course, he does.
Yeah. And it's this very classic, crazy old man look. Like, he's got the deerstalker hat. His hair is frizzed out to the side. He's got the Maz Kanat, whatever her name was, in Star Wars glasses that just make her eyes the biggest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
And he's got a dirty old coat. He looks like a hobo. Like, he looks like a man who'd be muttering to himself on the subway platform.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's like a sort of a Doc Brownie, but a dirty Doc Brown.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
So, after the crash, we go to Chekhov's fencing class, and Holmes is the best fencer in the universe, I guess, except for his teacher, who's slightly better.
Mm-hmm.
So some poor kid gets beaten by the teacher, and he's like, "You're terrible. Holmes, get in here and show them how it's done."
Here's another thing that bothers me. Everyone in movies always instantly goes, "I sprained my ankle." And like, how do you know that? How do you just know?
Have you ever sprained your ankle?
Mm-mm.
You instantly know.
But you know it's a sprain and yes. Not a strain versus a break versus a da-da-da?
If you break your ankle, you will immediately know because you will either hear or feel it.
But they say, I feel like everyone always says sprain, and I'm like, how? How do you just know?
Because you've never sprained your ankle, obviously.
So is everyone in movies just spraining their ankles all the time?
I've probably sprained my ankle a dozen times, and after the first one, I immediately know what it is the second time.
Huh. Well, I guess it's just me, then.
Yeah, that's... I mean, the first time it happens to you, you're probably like, ow, this really hurts, what's wrong? And then pretty much... every time after, you're going, oh, yeah, that's exactly what it is. I sprained my ankle.
Well, then I guess it's possible I have sprained my ankle, and I just don't know it.
Yeah, it hurts like hell, and you can't really walk for a while.
Then I'm sure I've done that before. That's definitely been a thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's grades of sprain. You can sprain it so that you can walk on it within a day or two. I sprained mine once so bad I couldn't really walk for like half a week or almost a whole week. So, yeah, I think that's less weird than you're giving it credit for. I'm sorry. Anyway, they fence a bunch, and Holmes loses a close battle.
Yeah. Super close. Oh, do we mention we met the a-hole yet?
No. And that's why I was giving this movie credit, because this a-hole kid in a lesser hands would have been Moriarty.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name, though.
Malfoy.
I mean, it is Malfoy, but...
He's got the same pinch face.
Don't you have the list right there in front of you?
Dudley.
Yeah, Dudley is this schmucky kid who hates Sherlock Holmes, and he is... immediately set up as to be the foil. And I was really happy that it wasn't Moriarty, because I just assumed that that's what you would do in a prequel movie.
Oh, that's Dudley. Dudley Moriarty.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, damn it. We're so close.
No, that's Dudley Red Herring. And I wish I knew how to fence. Like, it always seems so fun in the movies and cool.
It's one of those things that the skill, like, saying you know how to fight with a sword is super cool, but saying you're into fencing is not at all cool.
Really? I feel like if someone told me they were into fencing, I'd be like, I want to come watch.
I don't know. Fencing to me falls into one of those. Another show I listened to was talking about how Dungeons & Dragons is kind of more socially acceptable now because LARPing exists. And so, like, once a new weirder thing comes, it pushes everything to the left. So it's like the far outlier thing is now live is LARPing, where people are hitting each other with foam swords. So D&D was at 10. And please don't read this as making fun of LARPing. Whatever you like, you should fucking do. That is my stance on all things. As long as it's not hurting people, whatever you like, you should just do. But in the realm of, like...
I mean, I will make fun of you if you are my friend. I will just do it.
Yeah, but, like, it has become... Whereas 10 years ago, the quote-unquote nerdy character were sitting around playing D&D. Now, a quote-unquote nerdy character is a LARPer, just like that movie Role Models.
Oh, yeah.
that LARPing has become the established 10, so D&D is now like an 8. So it kind of pushes everything down. I feel like fencing is one of those things that in a movie, it's always used as like, oh, this guy's a giant nerd. Like Paul Rudd and I Love You Man is super into fencing. He's super into fencing. And all the people he fences with are super dorky weirdos.
Oh.
So I feel like it's one, maybe that's just my perception from that. It's just like.
Possibly. I mean, my college had a fencing club and my friend was in it.
Yeah. Again, people should do whatever they like. I would love to take a fencing class. I think it'd be fun as hell.
I wish there was like random like single classes. Like you can come, you take one class, sort of like a primer of like, here's fencing. If you want to try more, there's definitely options. But like here's just the adult one class center. That's what I want to start.
Like there's like a knitting and a crocheting and a fencing. Yeah,
like a cooking, a baking, a like a basket weaving, all kinds of random shit that like someone's like, I want to try that. And here's one class that I can take and it's just one. And if I want to do more, I can find more.
I think what you're describing
is the YMCA.
Yes.
Is your local rec center.
I mean, it's what they call in every movie and TV show the learning annex, but yeah, I'm pretty sure you're describing a community center.
I want to be a city planner.
just saying, maybe don't invest too much in this idea. I think it already exists.
Hey, there's a market somewhere. The adult one class center. It's got a ring to it.
The adult one class center. Andrew Leno's center for people who want to try stuff
but don't want to invest too much time. Because, well, it's because even as a child, that was a thing. Like, mom loved the Y because I could try everything I wanted. It was like karate or soccer or t-ball or basketball. It was all done through the Y, but the one that wasn't was gymnastics. So I never tried gymnastics because there wasn't a, like, trainer course. It was right. Just like, here, give us $300 and you go to competition in a week. And she was like, no. This kid doesn't do anything through. So
he certainly is not sticking with an athletic thing for more than 4 days.
But we'll never know. I could have been a gymnast.
You could have been.
I could have been at the Olympics. It could have been me holding the puppies, not that other gay guy.
Anyway, let's get back to Sherlock Holmes. The blow dart hallucinations throughout the movie are awesome, and they take a different form every time somebody gets shot. The next guy who goes down is a priest.
Because it's a stained glass window.
Yes. He gets blow darted.
It's sort of environment-based, like whatever your environment you're in turns against you.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. So he's in a church, which should be, you know, a safe space for a priest, and instead it gets kind of turned on its head. Say again?
Or most people. It should be a safe space.
Well, I mean, especially for a priest. Yes, obviously. It should be a safe space.
Technically speaking.
Yes. Yeah. Not to get it out of certain rabbit holes, but for most people, it's a safe space. I still, you know, I'm afraid the walls are all going to rattle and flames are going to shoot out of places when I cross that threshold. But the
TBD.
I've gotten in safely recently, so I'm still feeling good about it. But a priest, basically, it's his house, so you should think he'd be especially comfortable.
This is my house.
Yeah, this is my place.
So the window, he's looking at the window, and I couldn't tell if the window changed or he looked at a different window.
Oh, I thought it was a night the whole time.
No, it was a knight, but it was a knight. He looked at it, and it was a knight and a lady, and then he looked down, and then he looked back, and it was a knight and a stabbed lady.
Oh, I think that was just the beginning of the hallucination.
Yeah, so then there was a knight and a stabbed lady, and then the window started buckling, and welcome to the world, John Lasseter and Pixar.
Yeah.
And the very first fully formed humanoid CGI character. A stained glass knight in young Sherlock Holmes.
And I have to say, it really holds up better than you'd expect it to, because it's not perfect. No, but it's also not supposed to look like a thing that you recognize. You know, it's not a dragon. It's not a dinosaur. It's not a human. It's a collection of stained glass panels that have come to life and are attacking. So that's obviously not something that you see a lot. It's not like you go, you know, the reference point for that is this. So it's a sort of flat, two-dimensional thing, although it has some thickness to it. It is three-dimensional, but it's
not rounded.
No, it's flat, yeah. It's flat glass panels, and it's made up of disparate pieces that are all different shapes and colors, and so it really does kind of still work. I mean, obviously it's not perfect. They could probably make a way better one in 2015 than they could back then. But
I wish they would do that. Just redo this one scene as Pixar and be like, hey guys, just here's a little Easter egg for you.
Yeah, they should do that for an anniversary.
Fans. for you OG Pixar fans.
They should do that for their next Pixar anniversary.
I'm going to find out what that is and when that is.
Well, if this movie was the first, it would be some clean number from this movie. Is this movie 88?
85.
So it should have been this year. It should have been last year. Excuse me. It's 2016 now. Should have been last year for the 30th anniversary of Pixar.
Lucasfilm. It was founded in 1986, 29 years ago.
Okay. No, 30.
February 3rd, 1986, the day before my birthday.
That's 30 years. It's 2016. Today, this year. We just said that. It's not 2015 anymore.
Yeah. So they did their – it's funny because it says they're founded in 86, but this movie was 85, and it credits Pixar.
Yeah, it definitely does.
So that's interesting.
So anyway, this effect holds up really well, and Andrew alluded to this before. This is kind of where the movie starts coming together and really feeling like the prototypical Harry Potter type of story. Kids – to be honest, a lot of children's stuff falls into the – Harry Potter is not necessarily breaking new ground as far as – kids having to work with adults not quite getting on their level, and the back and forth that comes along with that.
Monster Squad.
I mean, literally dozens of movies you could name where it's like, hey, this thing's going wrong. They're like, shut up, kid. Oh my God, that thing!
Mm-hmm. But I think this one is especially glaring because it's, you know, a tall, on the more handsome side, male protagonist, a less handsome male sidekick, and a really pretty female sidekick.
Yeah, although
except
to be
in
fair,
Harry Potter, Hermione is it's Harry Potter, and that time Hermione did everything.
Yeah, but also you're not really describing the Harry Potter movies until they started to all grow up a little bit.
About the fourth one, the third or fourth one,
right? Because you know, no offense to any of the children, but they all kind of grew up and then was like, oh, he's like wildly attractive, she's wildly attractive, he's Ron.
Yep, he's Ron. And then Neville. Here's Neville Longbottom, ladies and gentlemen. He got hot.
The real savior of the universe.
Seriously, though.
That's an actual fan theory.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, he's hot, but yes, that is a fan theory.
Anyway, so this is where we get the montage of the movie, because it is an 80s movie. It is legally required to have a montage. And it is Holmes trying to solve this mystery that Dudley has set up for him. It's a timed, you know, you have this long to solve
this puzzle. I didn't
even catch
that as a montage. That's crazy. I didn't put that together. That counted as a montage.
Oh, absolutely it does.
I know it does. I just never was like, I never thought about that.
Yeah. Holmes is walking around looking at stuff with a magnifying glass. He's climbing on the roof. He's crawling
and
through classrooms.
My theory is that, like, for the trailer, they filmed a bunch of B-roll of him holding a magnifying glass, and then they weren't going to use it in the movie. And they were like, look, we have 30 minutes of B-roll of magnifying glass and look and picking stuff up. Write something in there. And they're like, how about the shithead character that gives him a mystery to solve, and the whole school watches? And they're like, great.
It is kind of cool that they set up Dudley to be the foil. Like, obviously, Dudley does a good job because he almost beats him.
Mm-hmm.
He does solve the mystery at kind of the last second, which is probably Holmes's flair for dramatic as well. But it's interesting that Dudley sets up a mystery that Holmes doesn't solve in 6 minutes. You know, he's like taking the full amount to do. So he's like kind of rolling through. He jumps into the kitchen, startles 60. All the women.
Saying, 60 minutes. 60 minutes. He has an hour.
Oh, he has an hour? Okay. No, I was saying solve in 6 minutes. Like it would be so easy for him.
Gotcha. Yes.
Yeah. And it culminates with Holmes picking up this vase and everyone being like, oh no, that's a priceless vase. What are you doing? And he just smashes it on the ground and picks up the trophy that's been hidden inside it.
But here's the thing. There was an identical vase on the other side of the mantle.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So like, he took a lot on faith that he was picking the right one.
I think he did touch it and get paint on his fingers.
Okay.
Because... Well,
Because just dumped it out, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
you could turn it over.
Yeah. The way that it's established is he sees some residue in the oven, and then he sees some paints that have been used, and it turns out he realized that Dudley made a fake vase. And so I think that he gets paint residue on his fingers, and then he smashes the vase. But yeah, he definitely could have just like pulled it out.
Or reached inside.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There are options here, bro. See, I don't know much of the mythos of Sherlock, but I think I would have been cool for Dudley to have ended if they had Dudley had been Lestrade instead of an actual inspector, because is he supposed to be that much older than him?
No, I think it's been a long time, but generally when they show Lestrade, him and Holmes are the same age.
It's like in Gotham, which I don't watch, but they have Bruce being like a 7-year-old whose parents just got shot, and Selina Kyle is like 18.
Right.
And I'm
all
like,
the villains are like adults.
Except for Poison Ivy. Poison Ivy is the same age as him.
Okay.
For some reason. But yeah, I'm like, guys, Selina Kyle is not 10 years older than him.
Right.
That's not how that works.
Right. Right. Yeah, that
Stop.
Is the problem. That
Stop.
Is the, well, that, and that's the other problem is like that. That's a perfect example of what I was saying before is, so you're telling me that this 8-year-old child has been, he's now 50, has been battling the same people for 42 years. Like, wouldn't they just get tired of it at some point?
Well, he didn't start battling them until he was like 20, I would say.
Right. But he was like aware of their existence and knew they were being evil monsters for 12 years then until he starts fighting them.
Mm hmm. Exactly.
It's just like, that's 42 years of his life he's dealt with the same people.
Like, they're the closest thing he has to a family.
Yeah, they are. They absolutely are. The penguin might as well be his brother.
They are. Well, there is that whole, that's why he hates him. Because they had the same upbringing.
Oh.
They were both rich
dudes. You know way more about Batman than I do.
Only a lot. I won't get into my Batman. I love the Batman Rogues Gallery. The Gotham City Sirens are my favorite. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Speaking of Inspector Lestrade, Holmes comes to him with, this is the first time that he like bursts in and is like, hey.
Inspector, this man killed, these two men killed himself and they were not suicidal.
That's right. He comes in and says, this could not be suicide. You're doing this wrong. You gotta.
Idiot.
Yeah, exactly. You dummy. Yeah, that's right. Because the next thing is that Holmes gets kicked out of school because Dudley accuses him of cheating.
Mm-hmm. And for some reason, all the teachers hate Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious why. It's not for some reason that he's a giant shithead.
Yeah. So, like, I don't super feel bad that he's getting kicked out of school. I feel bad that this shithead, like, he did it in an unfair way.
Right.
Like, he wasn't cheating.
No.
But, like, you are a shithead. Let this be a lesson to you.
And the great part is, like, everyone would be 100% certain that he wasn't cheating. Like, mm-hmm. Everyone knows he's just a super genius and that they just put up with it because they have to. But when
now they don't have to anymore.
Exactly. He just gave him an easy way out. It's like, oh, yep.
The first chance I've gotten.
It's your handwriting. You're done, kid. Get out.
It's like when Jack tells Liz they're not friends and Jonathan's like, get out of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. 30 Rock, in case anybody missed that one.
Yeah.
At that point, he has this long meeting with this professor.
Well, he turns Dudley's hair white as a comeuppance.
No, he turns somehow. Dudley white. He turns him into an albino.
I don't know how he does it. He's like, you should be normal. That's why I dropped my science experiment into your tea. You should be normal for the summer. And it's like, what did you do to him?
No idea.
Even with, like, today chemicals, I don't know how you would do that.
Yeah, he bleached him, basically. His hair went blonde, like, white blonde. His skin turned pale. He looked like, what's that?
Queen Elizabeth. He looks like, oh, he looks like
yeah,
the
Queen
guy.
Elizabeth. I was going to say that weird movie, Phenomenon?
Da Vinci Code?
No. From the 90s. Phenomenon?
Oh, yeah, the albino guy.
With the weird, like, alien thing.
Is that the one where the albino has powers?
I don't. There's two movies like that that came out really close at the same time.
He looks like Village of the Damned, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Any reference, you pick one.
Any
guys.
Of these references that no one gets but us. Pick one.
He
Google
looks like
it.
He looks like a ghostly figure. Moving on.
The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. Any weird albino person from a movie, because they're always over the top when they do that. At this point, the crazy professor, who is the uncle of the girl that we've been hanging out with that we haven't mentioned once, is mentioned only once, I guess, mm-hmm. is hit with a dart.
And it's as Holmes is getting on his, like, packing up the carriage to leave, they hear the commotion because he imagined the gargoyles on the bookends came to life and attacked him and crawled inside of his shirt. So he picked up a dagger and stabbed himself.
Yep.
R.I.P. uncle.
He stabbed himself in a curio shop, and Holmes is immediately like, well, I'm moving into his office and I'm gonna solve this mystery.
And the hooded Jawa blows past Watson and is like, and drops the blowpipe and disappears through an alleyway. And Watson picks it up and is like, you dropped this, and is like, well, you didn't come back for it, now it's mine.
To be
immediately
fair,
this is mine now.
Well, to be fair, it is kind of cool.
And it's Victorian London.
Yep.
There are no laws. It's so, basically Mad Max.
It's not basically Mad Max.
It's horsepowered Mad Max.
Oh, God. Don't start it. Someone's going to make steampunk Mad Max, and I'm going to have to kill myself.
Not steampunk, because that would be steam-powered. I want horse-powered Mad Max. I basically want Gladiator again. Ben-Hur. Mad Ben. The polecats are on the chariot swinging back and forth.
That's true. That is basically from that era.
Yeah.
So he decides to stay. Holmes brings
Emperor
him his pipe.
Cleopatriosa. That's the last one. I'm sorry. I'm done.
Did you get it all out of your system?
I did.
You good? I'm good. Can we keep talking about young Sherlock Holmes now?
Fine. So the blow dart, and he's there. There's the funeral that Holmes couldn't go to because he was kicked out of school, which seems like a really, really shitty thing.
Yeah, that's super vindictive. This person who you had a relationship with and he was clearly a mentor for you died, but because you're not a student, go fuck yourself.
Like, why is there a cemetery on school grounds?
To be fair, there's probably a cemetery at Hogwarts.
That's...
Like, a lot of people have died at that school.
They never talked about that.
They gloss over it, but like a lot of people have died at that school.
Only like, it's the room of requirements. It's just secretly a mass grave.
Yeah, I mean...
All those mirrors are just dead students.
I mean, even before they get to, like, having a war at the school, a lot of people have died there over the years.
Yeah, your fancy mercury glass room is just dead kids.
As far as the eye can see. So, he is holed up in the office, and...
Well, he sees a guy running.
Yes.
He's at the funeral, and he sees someone who also is watching from afar, and then takes off and tries to chase them and can't find them. So then they're hanging out in the office, and this is where we get the Deerstalker hat.
Yes, he puts on the hat, and he's like, I'm going to stay, I'm going to solve this mystery.
And everyone laughs at him and is like, you should take that hat off, you look like an idiot.
Yeah, and Watson is like, how are you going to get supplies? And him and the girl just kind of look at Watson very obviously like, yeah, you? And he's like, but I might get caught! And they just keep staring at him, and he just kind of bends his will to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of picking up the classic Sherlock Holmes accoutrement, once we've got the Deerstalker, they try to get Lestrade to help him with the pipe, and he says no, so they go to a curio shop, and they're like, hey, do you recognize this pipe? And the guy, the blow dart thing, not, I guess that is a pipe, right? I don't
know. It's a blow pipe.
Okay. So the guy's like, I won't help you unless you buy something. Cut to them exiting the shop, Watson coughing to death, and he's got the classic Sherlock Holmes pipe.
The big-ass, hunting horn pipe.
Right, right. Which, you know, spoiler alert, eventually Holmes is going to have.
Yeah. Sorry. But here's the thing. Looking at that, I was like, I immediately knew it was ancient Egyptian.
Yeah.
In style.
I mean, it's got hieroglyphics on it.
It's Isis.
Right.
It is Isis. Isis the goddess from ancient Egyptian culture, not the terrorist organization.
Let's make sure we clarify.
Sorry. But apparently, that's also a sidebar. There's a character in Downton Abbey, they got a dog, and they named the dog Isis, because it was a lady dog, and Mom was like, why would they do that? And I was like, well, Isis was a goddess. She was the Egyptian goddess of life, and the head goddess. And she was like, oh. And I was like, that's probably why the terrorist organization also took that name.
Right.
Probably.
Right.
So, that's not what that is. It's not a statement. It's history.
Yeah.
It is history.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Let's make sure we're clear. Dissect the 80s, not a terrorist supporter. Just in case.
Yeah.
Let's not mince words.
Absolutely none.
Yeah.
But like, I was like, Brosif, you're Sherlock Holmes. You can identify by a stain what custard was used in custard tarts.
Right.
And who has access to this specific medical book. And you can't recognize the Egyptian goddess Isis on an ivory pipe.
Yeah, it's very obvious that we were dealing with ancient Egyptian stuff here. So get on the ball here, Holmes.
Get on my level.
So they get some information and they start doing a little bit more searching about what's going on here.
I think it's because he told them it was ancient Egyptian and that it was part of the cult.
Right.
He mentions the cult.
And that leads them to getting near the Temple of Doom for the first time?
Remember, the dog, What's-Her-Face was walking her dog, and he saw the cloaked figure and ran after it and bit the thing, bit the hood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Holmes put it under a microscope and was like, there's wax on this. This wax comes from this one part of the world. Here, in London. 10 feet away.
So they go to the wax factory.
That seems oddly specific and convenient. But all right.
You know, it seems as if someone's writing this. Looks to the camera.
It's more like, how did no one think Holmes did everything? Like, oh, you know how to solve all this? Clearly you set it all up.
Because he's a child.
Not this Holmes. Adult oh, Holmes.
Because he did get accused of crimes a lot in the other books.
Oh, good. Because that's immediately would have been my thought.
Right.
Oh, well, this guy knows how to solve all the crimes in this town? By weird knowledge? It's him.
I think once you solved a certain number, they just assume that you have psychic powers.
That's where psych came from.
Right. Like five crime solves that they've definitively proven you weren't involved in, they just start trusting you. Like at a certain point, you could do a really interesting home story where he decides to become a psycho after he's helped them a bunch because he would totally get away with it. Like it couldn't be this guy. Why would he have solved 100 crimes for us and then started murdering people?
Just murder this one prostitute.
Yeah, exactly. Holmes is actually Jack the Ripper.
Oh my god. Spoiler alert. Someone write that fanfic.
So they take this cloth and they go to where this wax is made.
I'm Inspector Mary. I'm very intriguing and Holmes and Watson fight over me. Also, I turn into Batman.
My bodice hasn't been ripped, but soon it will be ripped by both Holmes and Watson at the same time.
Oh, God.
Also, all of the solving of the crimes comes from the things that I interject. Spoiler alert, assholes. The reason Ray knows how to fix shit is because in the beginning when we meet her, she's taking fucking electronics apart and spaceships apart, you douche nozzles.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so they go to where this cloth, the wax has been manufactured for this cloth, which is such a weird sentence. And yeah. It's just straight up the Temple of Doom.
Mm-hmm. So like, they're standing, it's like the point, it's, you know how the Louvre is, you see the tip of the pyramid outside of it, everyone? Mm-hmm. It's like that, you see the tip of this pyramid, and they're kind of walking around like, how do you get inside of it? And Holmes is like, it's the tip of the iceberg. Crack! And they go sliding down the pyramid.
Yes. Right into
whoa!
And then they're hiding inside the head of, not Anubis, but sort of Anubis.
I think it's I'm going to look it up. Okay. It's going to bother me.
It's not it's ultimately not that important, but they're kind of observing what's going on. And what's going on is a girl is being wrapped up like a mummy, put into a chamber, and then is going to be just burned to death with wax.
Sealed in wax.
Yeah.
Ramatep's sacrifice is the first thing that comes. Okay. I don't know. Ramatep is just the name of the cult. And it, worshipping Osiris. So okay. I guess that was Osiris.
Yeah, it was Osiris then.
That was weird. That doesn't look like Osiris. Anyways.
So they're in the head of Osiris watching this happen. And it's just straight up the sequence of Temple of Doom where Indy is watching them tear a man's heart out and all that stuff.
Well, so Sherlock goes down for a better look, but they stay up in the eyes of this creature. Not even hidden. Like, they are very clearly poking their head out of the, like, yes. Out of the hole, looking down.
Yeah,
like,
it's not...
If anyone turns around, you're fucked.
Yeah.
So, you don't know that the girl's alive until they start pouring boiling wax on her.
Yes.
And she starts screaming. And then Holmes is like, stop, she's alive! And it's like, uh-oh.
You done fucked up.
Dude, did you not realize what's gonna happen?
Yeah, they're definitely gonna kill that girl and you now.
Mm-hmm.
So they all take off running, and they're being chased through this graveyard, and one by one, they all get hit with blow darts. So we get
and
this...
And people just stop chasing. Like, we're probably good now.
Yeah.
One dude go in with the sword, but, like, we're good.
Yeah, every other time, it's worked with just the blow darts, so we're... Peace! And so we get three really good hallucinations from the three of them.
Watson, who we've established is fat...
Liberal air quotes.
It would be italicized, too. It is italicized and quoted. He imagines that a big mausoleum, the door goes transparent, and it's actually an icebox or a cupboard filled with sweets, and then all the sweets sprout little arms and legs and, like, very Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and just start, like, squeaking and, like,
it's got cupcakes, it's got croissants, it's got, you know, eclairs.
They trip him. Yeah. They trip him and knock him down and then start jamming themselves into his mouth. And it's very, like, uncomfortable in, like, a very real sense.
It's very Gulliver's Travels.
Except they don't try and force themselves into his mouth and make him eat them in that movie, in that book, do they?
I don't know. It'd be a real, real interesting journey if they did, I guess.
Yeah. The only Jonathan Swift that I've read is Indecent... Not Indecent Proposal. That's a very different...
Jonathan Swift's Indecent Proposal. Oh, that's the best thing you've ever said.
modest proposal is what I meant to say, I think.
I will
right?
give you all of my works. I would like to eat your wife. Literally.
It's a isn't it a modest proposal? Thank you. That's what I mean. He suggested they eat the babies. That
yes,
one.
Yes.
Modest proposal. that's the only Jonathan Swift that I've read. I swear that I've read it. I just messed up the name.
So Holmes's hallucination is
daddy issues. Daddy issues.
Yes, absolutely. It is. He has many unresolved issues with his parents, and it all stems with his dad just like standing in front of a fireplace as the room does that like stretch and get longer thing, and just like continuously yelling at him for being a worthless bag of crap.
AKA how Tim Burton movies look.
Yes. Also, AKA probably Tim Burton's home life.
Yeah. It's very German expressionist.
Yes, absolutely it is. It's real stretchy, lots of weird angles, et cetera, et cetera. And then
he gets out of it somehow.
He just realizes he's hallucinating and is like, this isn't real, this isn't real, this isn't real. And
Mary Sue.
Yeah, he comes.
I'm able to get out of a hallucination just by realizing I'm in one. I'm lucid hallucinating. You two make out now.
It's totally cool. Look, there's a red balloon. I'm in control now. So he snaps out of it, and there's a guy with a Sheik-style Aladdin sword who's like trying to cut his head off, and he keeps being like, this isn't real, whang, this isn't real, whang, this isn't real, whang. And by like the fourth time, you're like, dude, this is real now. You have to realize this now, for God's sake.
Okay, maybe this is real.
And he grabs like a wrought iron piece from someone's grave fence.
The fence around a grave is like the poles and the flat part, and it's the one pole has broken off. So he's like, this is a weapon.
Yeah, so he starts sword fighting this guy with a wrought iron spear, basically. And mm-hmm. then some guy fires a gun at them and is like, hey, get out of my graveyard! And the guy just scurries off with his sword and disappears. What was her hallucination again?
She gets grabbed by a zombie hand out of the dirt and
falls down. Oh, it's
falls
the Crypt Keeper thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
She falls down the grave, and then her dead uncle is throwing dirt on her as she's alive, asking him to stop.
Yeah, that's right. That one was the most creepy of the three of them, actually.
Yes and no. I still think the sweets was unnerving in the sense that they were like, eat me, please. Like, that weirds me out.
That's not how you think about all cookies?
No.
That's pretty much just my standard cookie thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You stick them in the Mr. Potato Head shoes.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
And make them walk their way to your mouth.
Yeah. And I eat them like Cookie Monster. So mostly I just spill them all over my shirt.
Yeah. There aren't a lot of cookies being eaten. It's like two cookies for every box.
mostly they get crumbled down the front of my shirt. But, you know, we all have our own things.
But cookies are sometimes food.
Yeah, exactly. And if you never eat them at all, you don't have to worry about that, because I just crumble them and drop them down the front of my shirt.
That's probably someone's fetish.
Everything is someone's fetish. It's 2016.
That's true.
And I said the right year without having to think too hard about it, so yeah. Yay.
Yeah. I'm excited to send out that work email and be like, hey guys, because what we do is very time sensitive and you want your placements to go down, please make sure you write 2016 on all going forward so that I don't have to go, guys, this, you don't get money today because you wrote 2015.
So they eventually get caught using the professor's laboratory.
No, they go to the police, because remember, that's why the guy in the graveyard sent them to the police.
Oh, right. Okay,
so they give Lestrade the darts.
That's
and
right.
Holmes is like, you're an idiot. Here are some darts. I won't explain anything about them. And he opens a box and drops them onto the table. And like, maybe you should mention, like, don't touch the pointy part.
Or just be like, these are super dangerous. They're in the box. Get them tested. Instead of just dumping poisonous darts onto someone's desk seems like a dick move to me.
Yeah, and he's like, get out, children. You're children. And so they leave, and he goes to whack them off the desk, and instantly one gets stuck in his finger. And you're like, well, okay, well, great.
He's done.
Seems like Holmes should have seen this one coming.
Yeah, seems like Holmes is kind of a huge dick, which we sort of knew already, but this just confirms.
Sherlock Sue over here.
Yeah.
Kind of a bag of dicks.
So they get...
Then they get caught in the
laboratory. Yeah, then they get caught in the professor's laboratory, and they're all expelled. Holmes gets, like, double expelled.
Mm-hmm.
And
they gotta kill the dog.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to say. So the professor...
The professor who he was fencing with turns into the Wicked Witch of the West and is like, throw that dog in the river and drown him.
Yeah.
You're all expelled.
And the nurse who before was very like sweet and tender to Holmes is like, yes, I think the dog ought to be drowned in the river, ain't it? And they're like, wait, what?
Hang on.
Why would you do that? I'll just take the dog. I'm going to leave. No, it's
school
property.
They're like, oh, you're going to a lady. What was going to happen to her?
She was going to like a lady school.
Or I thought the nurse was going to like take care of her.
Oh, no. I thought she was getting sent off to like a what the hell is that called?
A finishing school.
Yeah. Like for girls, like to learn how to be a lady, proper etiquette stuff. And then she's like, well, what of my uncle's inventions? And they're like, oh, we're just going to throw all that out. And she's
we're going to burn it all.
She's like, no, I'll take that. That's fine. That belongs to me.
And they're like, no.
No, actually, it belongs to the school because it was made here, so it's ours, and we're just going to destroy it instead of using
intellectual
it.
Intellectual property rights.
Yeah, he signed them away. Yep, contracts and stuff. Don't worry about it. Also, the dog is ours. What? Mm-hmm. The dog? How's it? Yep, school property.
That's my dog. Throw it in the river. Drown
my dog now. Going to drown it. You got to watch.
You have to watch.
And so, obviously, these people are evil, although we'll learn more about that in, like, 10 minutes of movie time.
So Holmes and Watson are like, Holmes is like, I'm getting out of this room. I have to save Elizabeth Hardy. Great. So Watson's like, I'm going to wait right here. And he's like, you're an idiot. Bye. And jumps out the window. And so Watson follows him.
Also directly out the window.
Also just, like, right out. Like, and well, then Fatty just falls.
So they go, they've discovered at this point that the professor was friends with the other two men who've been killed, and there's like a picture with four guys, three of them are dead, and they're like, we have to go get this fourth guy. So they go to his house, and they're
he
like,
shoots walk them.
Yeah, yes.
He's the old men in Secondhand Lions, where they're just shooting anyone who comes up to their property.
Yeah, he just starts wildly firing a gun at them when they're walking by. They're not even on his property yet. They're walking around the fence of his property, and it just starts firing at them wildly
from the
window.
And it's the great, like, Pirates of the Caribbean, like, ba-quing!
Yes.
Like, the ride Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
like the
ricochet ba-quing! Bullets. Yes.
Yeah, and then, like, a spark. Why does everything spark in this world, in movie world?
So they finally get inside, and they're like, hey, you're going to be poisoned by these darts. It's like a thing that's happening. And then right on cue, a weird hooded guy is hiding in his drapes and gets him with a dart. And so he thinks he's on fire, and they both tackle him and slap him a bunch. And like, your name is Mr. Whatever it is. And he's like, oh, yes, I'm Mr. Whatever
this
it is.
This isn't real.
Yeah. So now Holmes not only can get out of it himself, but he can get other people out of it.
Yeah, he's John Cobb in Inception, essentially. But that's now, like, is that a thing, like, to get people out? So now if someone is, like, on mushrooms near me and they start, like, tripping out, I'll just tackle them to the ground and be like, your name is John Smith. You're hallucinating. You are tripping balls.
I mean, I think that there's a thing where people who do hallucinogens sometimes have a babysitter, so if they start like freaking out, someone can be like, hey, it's not real, you're totally fine. Although
that
I imagine
is what the cupcake would say to me.
Exactly. I was just gonna say, I imagine if you're tripping balls and there's a person next to you being like, everything's fine, you're gonna look at them and they're gonna look like the literal devil, like stroking their chin, like, it's totally fine. You're not going to hell.
That's what the cupcake who ate me would say. Bye.
So yeah, I don't know how much that would help, but I think that is a thing.
Yeah.
So they tackle him, he gets, like, he's, like, he comes down from it, and then he gets, like, re-tripped.
Yeah.
And then he's choking Holmes, and Watson is like, your name is Mr.
Your name is... And he's like...
And then,
God damn it, Watson.
And then there's the Deus Ex Lestrade, where he comes bursting in with all of Scotland Yard, and is like, hey,
Cole Holmes. Cocks him in the back of the head with a revolver.
Yeah.
And that man's dead. He's an old man.
By the way, he has a skull fracture, and he's dead. So good job, Lestrade.
And Lestrade, by the way, we didn't mention it, looks like the evil Nazi computer in Captain America Winter Soldier.
Toby Jones, you mean?
Yeah, he looks like him.
Okay, well, the computer is not... Is Toby Jones played the guy who became the computer.
Yeah, him. But
okay.
You know what I meant.
I just wanted to be sure that you weren't trying to say he literally looks like the computer.
A computer. No, because the computer has his face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. It has like a green and black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Or he looks like that creature, the Maz Kanad creature, Lupita Nyong'o from Star Wars.
I don't think he looks anything like that creature.
Yeah, he had the face where it was mostly eyes, and the rest of his face was like real squishy and squinty.
You have called two different people in this movie Moss from Star Wars 7, and I don't think you're right about either of them, I have to say.
I don't remember the first one.
The professor.
I said they had the same glasses.
I thought the professor had like little tiny round glasses.
I thought they were glasses that like made his eyes huge, and it was like...
In any case, we're getting into the weeds of something that really doesn't matter. Anyway, so Lestrade finally helps and is like, oh, Holmes, I was tripping balls after I touched those things you put on my desk.
Totes
so,
trip ball. Yeah. It's like those GLAAD commercials with the moms. I was totes tripping balls.
So he's like, yeah, you were totally right, but I don't care about anything else you have to say, so get out. And he's like, wait, no, doesn't this prove that I've got like good ideas and you should listen to me? Nope, get out.
Bye.
So the professor and the nurse reveal themselves to be evil, and they steal Elizabeth.
The nurse reveals herself to be bald and terrifying.
Yes. Well, that's because all of the Ramatep cult people are bald. They have like a single strand of hair in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Or a single bunch, rather, not a single strand. So Sherlock and Watson see that Elizabeth has been taken, and they grab the flying machine, and they start flying all over London.
Yeah, well, Elizabeth gets, what's the word? He hypnotizes her with his ring into revealing something.
And that's when Holmes realizes that he's been evil the whole time, because he got hypnotized briefly by the ring while they were sword fighting and yada, yada, yada. They take this flying machine, they land it onto this really fake-looking ice in the Thames or something, some river in London. They land on it, and immediately it just, like, buckles underneath, and they start sinking, and they have
immediately
to, like...
Immediately dead.
Yeah, they have to just, like, leap to safety. So Elizabeth is now being mummified and is going to be poured in hot wax. So we get the big action sequence of the whole movie, which involves Holmes and Watson basically setting fire to this temple in a bunch of weird ways.
And just being like, well... You're dead.
Yep.
Bye, everyone.
Yep. So they rig up this chandelier somehow to drop the chandelier and divert the channel of hot wax so it doesn't pour all over Elizabeth. So there's this, like, tense scene of, like, rigging this chandelier and Watson being like, hurry up, Holmes! Hurry up, Holmes!
And also the question of, like, how did Holmes get up to that chandelier?
He climbs.
But, like, from where to where?
He just climbs. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Okay.
You see him climbing. It's fine. Just assume. It's good. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Again, we're talking about the adventures of young Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, they totally look the same, Trip. We're going to have to post a side-by-side. But Maz Kanata and Lestrade totally look the same.
Okay. Well, maybe I just think of them differently, but okay. We could do a side-by-side. It's fine. We'll put it up on the blog. When we post the episode, we'll put it up.
That'll post this week.
I'll put it up in the podcast episode. It should be in the feed. So... all hell breaks loose. Everybody's fighting and whatever. And it's basically...
And we get my favorite section.
Before we get there, hold on. Just 2 seconds. It's like 60 to 70 adults versus 2 children.
Yeah.
And it's billed as like a fair fight for the majority of this.
And the fact that these kids aren't instantly just like spiralized
by
a bunch of sabers is bananas.
So go ahead. Take your thing because it is the best part.
So the nurse lady is like, hey, she shows up with her blow dart. And she's like, I'm ready to F shit up. And, like, goes to shoot. And Holmes and her get into a scuffle. And he grabs the end of the dart gun and just blows it right back into her throat. And she's like, ah! And she, like, starts tripping balls. Then her robe catches on fire. And I'm like, I don't know what you thought before, but now you're literally on fire. So you could...
Yep.
So maybe you're drowning in your hallucination, but you are on fire now.
So... the evil professor has grabbed Elizabeth and is loading her up in a cart while she's still all dazed and confused. And he's like ringing it up. And Holmes is taking this grappling hook and like,
no, Watson is. Oh, taking that's the right. Grappling Watson. Hook because yes. Holmes is passed out on the chandelier surrounded by hellfire.
Yeah. He got conked out. That's right. We skipped a bunch of stuff. The fighting happens. We're going to get to the point here. So Watson swings a grappling hook onto the axle of the horse cart, which is attached to the chandelier, so that as they run away in the horse cart, it will lift Holmes to safety.
And also destroy the horse cart.
Which is exactly what happens.
Rips it in half. He just rips it in half.
It's like the James Bond movie we watched, where his car keeps getting shrunk and shrunk and shrunk.
It's just like clip, 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 clip.
Yeah, so it's like a full-size horse cart with two axles, a front and a back, and then suddenly, nope, just the front and still like pulling away. Mm. Moriarty. Spoiler alert. I used his real name. The evil professor's Moriarty. He gets thrown from the cart. I managed to not do it for the whole episode, and I just boogered it up there. Yeah. Should I edit that out?
No, leave it in. It's okay. Fine. Okay. You've lasted long enough.
Okay. So he gets thrown from the horse cart. Elizabeth is pulled. Holmes has been lifted to safety. Elizabeth is safe. Watson yanks Holmes up, and he's like waking up at this point. So they like go down to find Elizabeth, and it turns into the big final showdown of Holmes.
So they're leaving. They're kind of walking away. They're like, well, the flying machines are gone because we have to walk all the way back to school. And then Moriarty. Wraith. Professor Wraith.
His name is Wraith,
which is Atar spelled backwards, who's the guy who ran the cult. Holmes should have picked up on that.
He definitely should have picked up on that.
So, he's like, Holmes! And he pulls out a pistol for the first time in the movie and goes to shoot, and Elizabeth steps in front and is like, no! Boom! Dead.
Yeah, right in the gut. And she's doing like a movie like, I'll be all right. I got shot in the gut kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So Holmes goes to fight him, and they're sword
and
fighting.
All of a sudden, he's a terrible shot again.
Yep.
Because he fires like three shots at a guy who's walking closer to him, and misses every single one.
Yep. And then they have a sword fight, which, does he get kicked in the dick, or did you just want him to get kicked in the dick?
I wanted him to, because that's my thing. People in movie fights have too many morals. Like, if it's death or death, like, you kick in the dick.
Oh, absolutely. I don't even need to be in a life or death fight. Like, if someone were attacking me, period, even if I wasn't like, oh, they're going to murder me, they're just, like, throwing punches at me, like, I'm kicking you right in the nuts. Like, yeah. I'm hitting...
Well, see, yeah. Nuts is for everything. Eye gouge is for life or death. I will go right for your eyeball, and I don't feel bad about it.
So... they fight, then they end up on the ice floe fighting, and they're on, like, again, like, most of this movie looks really good, but the ice pieces that they're floating on is clearly fake, because they realistically, you couldn't have that fight. So they're, like, sword fighting on these ice floes, and then...
they're bouncing up and down, it's clearly plastic.
Yeah, clearly plastic and foam.
And then they stop fighting for a second and pull back, and all of a sudden, Wraith just falls through the ice.
Yep, right in the water. Through. And he does, like, one, like, burst up, like, gasp, like, and then, whoop, sunk, gone.
And then he does the Terminator thumbs up as his hand sinks into the ice. Spoiler alert, he doesn't.
He
but
does
I wish
not
he
do
did.
That, just FYI. So, you're like, all right, we'll reconnoiter. Elizabeth's going to have, like, a bandage around her, and they're going to be, like, sitting having tea. Nope, JK, it's Elizabeth's funeral.
She's dead, mother effers. And then they get, he's like, you should have this. And he gives him the pipe and he's like.
Oh, Lestrade also gets promoted. We find out like, they're inspector. Like, it's a little montage. We're like, congratulations, Inspector Lestrade. Golf claps.
Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I had the feeling that this would be the first of many, many adventures for me and Sherlock Holmes.
And Sherlock gets the pipe and they go clip-clopping away. And then. Credits, except comes back to movie during the credits, and this guy goes like staggering into a pub, and they're like, here, I need lodging for the night, and I'm like, okay, sign the book, and he writes down Moriarty.
And you flip pan up and it's Wraith.
Right. Which has ruined all the things I was excited about, because before it was like, yay, they didn't ruin Moriarty, because Sherlock didn't know him as a child, except JK totally knows Moriarty.
But I don't think that's, if that's the worst of the, like, he knows everyone, and it happens at the very end of the movie, that's not that bad.
No, but I just, you know, I would prefer to just, like, can't he just have defeated an enemy? Like, I guess they were setting up for a sequel.
Yeah, I forget old movies did that.
Well, they still do and, that.
No, but I mean, like, because today, every movie does that. Literally every movie is like, the end, question mark. Like with book series. Like, can't you just write one?
Right. Not every book needs to be three books. Just the one.
Not every three book movie has to become five movies.
Yeah, can we
guys,
just one per?
Stop.
It's
stop.
One per, guys.
Stop. I lose interest real fast.
Yeah,
I'm looking at you, Hunger Games.
Yep. Well, that's
I didn't even see half of them.
I saw the first movie and was like, that was all right. And then the second movie came out and I was like, eh. And also, I didn't really like the second book, so why do I care? And then I realized they were doing two more, and I just was like, I didn't even like the third book at all. Why would I go see two movies about it?
Yeah, I didn't. I was like, well, I heard Westwood was terrible, and everyone was like, no, it's just the worst of the three. And I was like, yeah, that's code for terrible.
Yeah, that's how you talk about terrible. So we should do everybody's favorite segment. Hot tag taglines. Hot tag tagline.
Young Sherlock Holmes. Young Mary Sue.
Hot tag tagline. young Sherlock Holmes. He just, everybody in his whole, all of the people that he's going to fight with, he knows already. God. Would you recommend this movie?
Yeah, I would. It's really enjoyable, especially as far as things on this program that we've done. Like, yes. It's very enjoyable. Fun. It's exciting. I mean, it's not a perfect movie, but
It's probably 10 minutes too long, I would say. But I agree with you. I like it a lot. It's fun to watch.
It's got a lot going for it. Especially if you're looking for something to watch like with family. Like,
yeah, grandma's not going to be offended. The kids will have something to do. Like, it's a pretty decent family movie. It's not world-class great or anything. And I think some of it, obviously, we obviously love this movie growing up, so there's some nostalgia for us. But overall, I think that I definitely would recommend watching this. I don't think it currently is, but I was thinking about doing this for the show for a while because it was on Netflix, but I don't think it is anymore because we watched your copy.
I have a copy. Ladies.
Oh, boy. Why don't you give the people a clue for next
week? Rob Lowe freezes in a lake. Rob Flow.
Don't you forget about me.
Dissecting the 80s is a Chum Some of This production. Ow!
It's a little Nixon on the end.
You want to take it again?
No, it's good. Okay. We're going to keep it. One take wonder.
Okay. Why is my first note outdoor? Oh, okay. I forgot about the movie. Keep that in. Yes.